Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal. From my Warwick home on a Friday morning, it is rivalry weekend approaching for our men's teams. We will get into those matchups in a separate edition of the pod. On this one, we're going to touch on everybody over the last week. I am joined, as always, by my usual co-conspirator, the sports director at ABC6, the weekend co-host of Cordishy and Coit on WEEI Providence, Nick Coit, ladies and gentlemen. Coity, how we living?
Excited, Bill. This is a great weekend on the sports calendar. I'm glad we have a lot of great college hoops to talk about. I am excited. How could you not be? This is the showcase of the great programs that we have in the state this weekend. It's going to be fun.
Brown Bryant men on Friday night at the Pizzitola Center. Providence URI men on Saturday night at the Amica Mutual Pavilion. As I said, we will get into those on a separate rivalry edition of the pod that will also drop today. We will start, Coit, with a rivalry matchup that already took place earlier this week, and that's in the women's game. Brown winning at Bryant 58-53, and the Bears, Coit, are making a habit out of this. They're 5-3. All of those wins are by single digits. This was another tight one into the last minute. Big three-pointer by Bella Mauricio. Big offensive rebound by Bella Mauricio helped clinch this one. And, Coit, I think what I saw at the Chase the other night was two teams headed in the right direction. Brown maybe just a year or two ahead in terms of where their rebuild is at right now.
Which makes total sense because their coach is, you know, a year or two ahead of Lynn Ann Kukowski in her first year leading Bryant. But there's good signs there. There's buy-in from both teams. And it was a really competitive game. It was a fun game to watch, particularly the end. And a few players made the difference. But these Bears have really made defense a calling card. Monique LeBlanc said as such, and you see it on the floor. And that's why they own wins over two Big East opponents, Georgetown and Providence. That's why they own a win over an A-10 opponent in Loyola Chicago. And that's why they were able to win the other night. They'll find their scoring. They find it in different ways. Whether it's Kyla Jones having a big night or whether it's somebody else like Bella Mauricio catching fire, they will find the scoring. It's the defense that they're leaning on, and that's a great thing in terms of, you know, being able to win close games, as you mentioned, but also that's a buy-in thing, and I think we're seeing that with the Brown Bears. So, they continue to, you know, impress on a lot of different nights.
And not everyone signs up to defend and to hit the offensive glass. Those are the dirty areas in the margins, and Brown is excelling in those right now. I asked Monique LeBlanc about that after the game, and she was thrilled with the way her kids are putting forth an effort at this point. And you could see it in the last 2 minutes of this game. It helped decide
totally.
It. You know, 51-50 game, great execution on the offensive end. You get Bella Mauricio to pop out for a three, and she nails it. Scoreless at halftime. 14 points in the second half, 4-for-8 from three after the break. And the way I wrote it for the Journal was, it's the amnesia that all great scorers have. The fact that she's scoreless in the first half, she's 0-for-5, and she leaves that in the locker room and comes out and helps decide the game in the second half.
Yeah, I love that. Amnesia. I think we saw that, and we'll talk about it when we talk about the men's teams with Ticket Gaines at the AMP and the start that he had to the season offensively, and then just turning things around on a given night because he believes in his shooting ability, just like Bella Mauricio believes in her shooting ability. And I love the quote where she said to us the other night, you know, I get yelled at if I don't keep shooting.
Yeah.
Because that's the belief that her coaching staff or teammates have in her. And that's a great thing. They believe that she was going to have a night like that. She's going to have a stretch like that. And, you know, obviously you could talk about the shooting all you want, but that offensive rebound, it was huge toward the end of the game. And it, you know, was one of those plays that decided things. So when you see that kind of buy-in from somebody who is, you know, having a good night, you know, particularly in the second half offensively, that's huge too.
Yeah. It's a missed free throw. It gets tipped out by Olivia Young. Mauricio corrals it. She gets it over to Kyla Jones, who makes a couple free throws to clinch it. Kyla Jones, the reigning Ivy League player of the week, coming off what she did at Monmouth, 34 points in a road win for Brown against the Hawks. She had 18 the other night against Bryant. Quick look at the Bulldogs. They've got a star. Mariana Planas-Fortuny is a star. Someone who has expanded her game to the perimeter. She made a big three-pointer in the last minute of that game to keep it at 1 point. She had 22 and 10 in that game. And you know, she talked a little bit after the game about expanding her range beyond the arc. She's 2 for 5 from three the other night. This is a player who her first two college seasons only took 2 three-pointers total. You know, but now she's developing a little bit more of a professional game, and it's going to serve her well next year when she goes overseas and starts making money playing this game, because she's that good, Coy.
Yeah, she is that good, and she's been that good. But it's interesting when a new coaching staff comes in and you sort of get a second look. You know, you get okay, we know you're a great player. How can we make you a better player? And how can we make you a better player for not only yourself, but our program? You know, because she's obviously expanding her game, you know, where she can play professionally. But it also helps this particular team when she can stretch the floor by hitting three like she did toward the end of the game. That's huge, because then defenses say, uh-oh, okay, we need to respect this now because she can hit that shot. And then all of a sudden, if they're respecting that, it might open somebody else up. It might open up, you know, a lane for somebody to cut, like all those sorts of things come into play. So, you know, an opponent's mind starts racing when they know that she's got a new part of her game, you know, a new trick in the bag. So yeah, she's an impressive player. And, you know, I think the fact that she would buy into that too, because of how good she is, that is a huge feather in the cap for the new coaching staff. You know, the fact that Lena Kukowski can say that to her, she buys into it. Then everybody else in the program says, well, this is our player here, and she's buying in new staff. So guess what? We're all going to buy into it. And that's huge. That's huge for new coaching staff who, you know, is really, you know, impressed with what they've seen from the players that have returned so far and the players they've added, like Mia Mancini, who, yeah, she had a tough night against Brown, but she's become one or two on the scouting report for other teams now because she's been that good so far for the Bulldogs. So she's going to get that kind of attention, and she'll bounce back. I know that for sure.
Yeah, Bryant, they lost a couple games at the Florida International event. You know, the other night, obviously, they come up just short against Brown. You mentioned Mia Mancini. Eric Rube wrote a feature about her this week. The former Wheeler star, her shot's not falling the other night. She has a career-high 6 assists. You know, she's still willing to work in other areas of the game.
Bingo. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Lynn Ann, and, you know, she's got a good parallel for Planis Fortuny. She had Sam Breen at UMass, who's the all-time leading scorer in the history of that program, and, you know, a forward who sort of expanded her game to the outside over the course of her career, made her a little more pro-ready. You know, what I love about Lynn Ann in the early going is, you know, she won a lot at UMass. She was in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, yes, she knows that this is going to be a process at Bryant, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't want to win any less immediately. When they didn't get that offensive rebound in the last minute, I saw her pivot and just slam the scorer's table near Bryant's bench. And you could see in, you know, sort of two feelings there. First, the frustration that her team didn't execute in that moment. But second, what I took away is the genuine belief that they could win the game, and that she is instilling in them, hey, yeah, this is a rebuild. It's year one, but that doesn't mean I don't expect to win every night, and that I don't want you to play to that standard. You know, so I like the messaging from her, not only during the game, but also after what she had to say, for the most part, in her press.
She ain't preaching patience. That's for sure.
No.
She ain't preaching patience. And I love that. I love that. You should have that kind of standard. Establish it right away and see where it takes you. You know, there's no reason with the talent that they have that they can't win some games here in year one as they're trying to build up the program. So I loved it. I got a shot of her walking all the way to the end of the bench, walking all the way back. That frustration, you could see it on her face. But she knows that, you know, I do think she knows it's going to take time. Like, it's going to take time. So there is a little bit of patience required. But like you said, it doesn't mean that they can't go out there and win on any given night.
Nope. The Brown women will host. Ooh, let's see. Got it in front of me. Bryant women will host Sacred Heart on Saturday. The Brown women will host Johnson and Wales on Sunday. That'll be their next time in action. Coit, I also caught a women's game on Thursday night in Kingston. A surprising result in that one for me, but maybe not to Tammy Reese, based on what she had to say. After this one, Quinnipiac comes in and knocks off the Rams 61-59. A last-second jump shot by Bree Bowen off a scramble on a loose ball. It was a game that URI shot the ball poorly, did not necessarily defend in terms of field goal defense. They forced a lot of turnovers, but Quinnipiac shot 50% in the game. It was a game where the Rams flirted with disaster throughout. They were down by 13 late in the second quarter, and ultimately it came back at the end and bit them. A surprising result, and not for the first time this season. And, Tammy Reese was typically blunt after the game, win or lose. You know, she's generally pretty transparent with how she feels. And I don't know if there's another way to describe it, Coit. She ripped into the Rams a little bit here.
She did, and this is not the first time, as you were hinting at there. This is something that the coaching staff has sort of been fighting and battling, is, you know, what is going on in practice, and, you know, the Rams putting in that kind of work that they need to be the program they want to be the team that they want to be. We heard this. I just remember particularly after the game at Brown, we heard a little bit of that, you know, Tammy saying that heading into the main game, she didn't love the way that they were practicing. She sort of had that feeling like, do we need to lose one here in order for the message to get through? And, you know, she felt better about winning at Brown, but still there was still that sort of hint like, okay, are we getting what we need out of this group so far in order to, you know, achieve our goals? And I think it was on display again with the Quinnipiac game. It's a broken play at the end there, but it's all about, it's all about putting yourself in that situation. And the Rams, I know that the coaching staff believes they never should have put themselves in that situation. You could talk about one play, but I guarantee the coaching staff is thinking it was everything leading up to that we're frustrated by here, not only in the game, but everything, you know, in terms of the preparation.
And when you go 1-for-14 from three, you go 14-for-26 at the line. It's very hard to win games when you shoot that poorly. The turnovers forced, good, but 24-for-48 means you're not guarding the ball at the other end. And you gave up some easy looks at the rim for Quinnipiac, despite having a size advantage. And when they start banking in a couple threes, it's like, oh boy.
Yeah.
You know, this is really bad luck here. And all those things come together and give you an ugly loss. And Tammy, we don't need to say anything. We'll just look at her quotes after the game. We have a sense of entitlement a little bit right now. We're not ready to play. And we're not ready to compete, and that falls on me. At another point, she said, they're disconnected, and we said this in the locker room. They're not playing as a team right now. They're not. They're playing as individuals that are on a court together. That's a huge difference. Another point, she said, everyone wants to do it their way right now. Me, I don't want to get subbed out, and it's affecting us a little bit. We're not playing as a unit. I mean, that is about as blunt and about as brutal as it gets. And generally, you don't have coaches who are that transparent. I hinted at a little bit after the Brown game. I thought she was sending a little bit of a message with a couple of her rotations in that game. And certainly, as you noted, with a few of the things that she said after that game with respect to, they hadn't practiced well, they hadn't necessarily prepared well. And now this feels like an ongoing thing. You know, even though they won a couple games in Las Vegas, they put themselves in a position going into the weekend hosting Princeton, who's in the top 25. That's a showdown game on Sunday. And now it feels like a game that URI must win if they want to have any hopes for an at-large NCAA tournament consideration here at the end of the season.
Totally. Absolutely. And that's the disappointing part, too. You mentioned the Vegas trip. It's pretty successful. They go out there, get a couple of wins. Like, you feel like, okay, maybe they learn from their early stumbles. Maybe they had their early growing pains. And then this happens. And again, it's the lead up too. When a coach is that blunt, that is not about one game on one night. That's a coach that is venting frustration from a few days of lead up preparation. I mean, you're the way that she said it all. I mean, good for Tammy for being that straightforward. I think that's how much she believes that this team can have a very high ceiling. I think that's why she's doing that. But, you know, again, this isn't the first instance that we've sort of heard or that's been hinted at. And so that's tough. That's an ongoing battle. So how they address it, I'm not sure. Is it a wake-up call now, particularly a buzzer beater on your home floor? Does that affect the players? We're going to see, and we're going to find out quickly. Because if they can turn around and bounce back with the Princeton game and have a good performance that day, then okay. You know, but this is a really interesting game here on Sunday now for them. As you mentioned, an up game, a tough opponent. How do they respond? I am fascinated to see how they respond in that game and what Tammy has to say afterwards, because I'm sure she will tell us how they responded in practice and how much work they put into it after that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, sitting in the media room Thursday night after the game, I had a flashback to being a teenager because Tammy gave me the very parental, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed vibe, which is always the worst thing to hear from your mom or dad. You'd rather them yell at you and let it all out and think, all right, eventually this will pass. But when they hit you with the, I'm not upset, I'm disappointed that you made the decisions you did, you just want to crawl in a hole and curl up into the fetal position. It's the worst thing in the world. And when your coach is saying things like that so publicly, you can only imagine what she's saying to them privately.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And so you think about preparation leading into Princeton. You know, she said, we're not even worried about a game plan right now. We need to fix us. You know, we need to play better. You know, because they're a whole different challenge otherwise. And we've talked about the Ivy League, the women on this pod previously. You know, Charlie Cream's most recent projections is that the Ivy League would be a two-bid league with Princeton and Columbia, and Harvard's right there, just on the outside. Providence found that out in a midweek trip to go face the Lions on Wednesday. Columbia 77-52 win on the Upper West Side of New York. Olivia Olsen got off in that game. She had 15-9. Kylie Shepherd didn't play. Otherwise, Providence was largely ineffective against a team that we said leading into that game was one of the best non-conference teams that Providence was going to play.
And they had trouble with Brown when they go and they lose at Brown too. Like,
yeah,
the Ivy League women's basketball is high level. It is high level. So Providence figures that out the hard way. You know, they've had their ups and downs. You know, I got to see them against Monmouth at home right before the Thanksgiving holiday. You know, and a good day for the Friars. They win. But, you know, they're going through some growing pains. You know, I think Olivia Olsen will, you know, have her days. You know, there's a lot of talent there with her, you know, and with, you know, some of the players that they have, they've brought in, you know, but the positivity, the energy with, you know, Aaron Bath and pushing these players to be better, you know, you're going to have days where you face an opponent and things happen like that. But the players have really seemed to buy in. You know, I've told you how much I think Grace Afosa can really affect the game when she comes in. You know, obviously that's somebody that obviously has bought into their program as well. So, you know, Friars have had their ups and downs, but to be expected here, you know, in the first year with the new head coach.
Yeah, Grace Foza also didn't play the other day against Columbia, and that leaves the Friars really shorthanded without two starters.
There you go.
You know, they bring in Nariah Scott and Emily Archibald into the starting lineup, and, you know, predictably, when you take Shepherd and Foza out, offensively, you're going to struggle. You shoot 31.5% from the field. Columbia, on the other side, you know, really managed to hurt Providence, particularly on the glass. You know, and Columbia had really good attendance at Levy and Jim the other day, 23-57. I have to imagine that was, you know, some kind of kids' day, I would guess, you know, like a field trip type day.
Yeah.
You know, where you pull the kids out of school and and say, all right, let's go watch some women's basketball. And, you know, sometimes those environments can be really difficult. You know, you put a message on the video board and the kid starts screaming. It's like, man, you know, we are, we're not very comfortable here. This can be difficult.
Just don't do like the, don't do the scream-a-meter or like the loud noise-a-meter. That is, they do that. They do that at the Amp with Providence Bruins games on Sundays at 3:05 when they bring in the, you know, the mites and the squirts, then the hockey programs that come in from all around the area. And then it is just loud shrieking. Ooh, yeah, that'll hurt anybody's head. So,
Coit and Scott Kardashian, they have a segment on their show, What's Grinding My Gears. I think Coit's probably mentioned the scream-o-meter at some point on What's Grinding His Gears.
I think I have. Yeah, I think I have. Yeah. I think that I can't remember when that happened, but I think it did. Yeah.
Not pleasant.
No.
Not pleasant. It's not.
Nope.
Providence women host Iona on Saturday. That's a 2 p.m. tip at Alumni Hall. That will precede the Providence men against URI. The Friars women and the Rams women lock up on Wednesday at Alumni Hall. Friars women will host URI. I think that's a 7 p.m. tip. The URI women will be on the road against two Big East opponents after they play Princeton. They go to Providence, and then they go to St. John's, who was in the NCAA tournament last year. You know, so you'll get some women's rivalry flavor that will continue into next week. You know, and obviously Providence and Brown men will play next weekend. We'll get into that one a little bit on future editions of the pod. Coity, flip over to the men here. You know, our most recent game, I think, was the Providence men on Tuesday night against Wagner. And as you alluded to earlier, a breakout for Ticket Games in an 86-52 win over the Seahawks. Ticket Games was the man on fire the other night, 21 points. 7 for 10 from three, a career high in makes. Providence had 13 three-pointers in the game, shot over 40% from three. I think this was probably, you know, the most clear illustration of Kim English's vision on offense so far. 25 assists on 29 field goals. They look potent against the Seahawks.
I'd like to thank Ticket Gaines for finding his hot spot with the corner three, which was right in front of where I was sitting with my camera. Wow. So I got a couple of great shots for the highlights at 11 o'clock. So again, I would like to thank Ticket Gaines for that. Appreciate that.
Very good. Very good. Ticket. Good
job. It's all I care about. No, not really. Yeah, it was interesting to hear Kim English say, you know, I believe in the hot hand, and clearly Ticket was the hot hand. And clearly, once they knew he was the hot hand, they're trying to get him the ball so he can get more shots up, because, you know, at that point, you know, in that game, they knew, okay, well, you know, this guy's got it tonight, so let's get him the basketball. So, you know, I think Ticket's done a lot of things really well already so far this season. I told you, I think he's one of those guys that's really helping in terms of the buy-in, you know, with the new coaching staff here. And, you know, clearly dives on the floor one of the first possessions of the season. Kim English is picking him up, you know, but like, you see that kind of effort and you're like, all right, I like this guy. This guy's going to bring it every night. So you like to see a guy like that rewarded, you know, offensively in the way that he was the other night against Wagner. I just think these two home games, Bill, have been really beneficial. Yes, they were, you know, big blowout wins with Lehigh and, you know, Wagner, but I think, you know, these guys, some of these guys saw the ball go through the hoop. Some of these guys, like Bryce Hopkins, really seem to assert themselves and sort of see like, oh yeah, no, this is what I can do to have success here in this offense, you know, running things on my home floor. It's good to see what it looks like again. And I think they saw that with these two games, particularly a guy like Bryce Hopkins, who was himself.
It's a great point. It's why you play these games. If you're a power conference team, you want to get your players some confidence. You want to get them feeling comfortable and in a rhythm. You look at Bryce Hopkins the other night against Lehigh. He's 25-14. He continues the breakout that started against Georgia when he found his range a lot more from two-point land. You know, got a lot closer to the rim. Started to bully his defenders like he did last season. Against Lehigh, showed his athleticism with a reverse layup and an X-rated two-hand dunk down the middle of the lane on two guys, yeah. You know, which was just nasty. You know, and you look the other night against Wagner, he's efficient again. He's 7 for 11 from the field. You know, made it look easy against the Mountain Hawks, which is, you know, or, sorry, against Seahawks, which is what he's supposed to do. Like, he's Bryce Hopkins. He was just about the Big East Player of the Year last year. If it wasn't for Tyler Kolek and Marquette, he probably walks away with that award. You know, and that's the level you hoped he would play at coming into this season. I think you mentioned Tickett, and I want to bring this up because it's his approach as a mature player, a graduate transfer, I think is noteworthy. He had 2 points against Lehigh. He's 0 for 3 from the field. And Providence fan messaged him on X, Twitter, publicly, and said, you know, I like, paraphrasing, you know, I love Tickett Gaines because he's not scoring and, you know, still dive on the floor for a loose ball. And Tickett quote tweets him and says, shot's not falling, do something else. And I just thought, and I asked him about it after the Wagner game, I just thought that's an approach that a mature player would take that maybe a freshman wouldn't. I think a lot of times early in your career, you're thinking, hey, I score, that's what I do. That's how I can help the team best. And I think when you're someone like Tickett, who's played, you know, into his fifth year of college basketball now, he's been at two different places. He's seen Power Five competition at Tennessee. He knows what Kim English wants after 2 years at George Mason with him. I thought he had a really mature perspective. And if that's one of your leaders, then Providence is in really good hands going forward.
Amen. And I think they have two guys that have been starting for them that have instilled that with Tickett and with Josh Aduro. And Josh has scored. I mean, Josh has scored. He's shown his prowess offensively. He's shown, you know, the soft hands, the touch, the maturity near the basket, all those things. But there's just a sense of real belief in Kim English and his staff. And they have really, they've grown together in a different place at George Mason. And so coming here, there's just a familiarity. There's a, okay, this is when Kim says this, this is what he's expecting. And that bleeds through to the rest of the roster. So having two guys that are mature like that, it's huge. And I think it makes the returning players here feel pretty comfortable too and say like, oh, well, yeah, these guys are good basketball players. They know what we need to do, you know, to have success. So yeah, it's obviously been helpful here for the program to have guys like that.
Providence's opponent on Saturday, URI, last time out, Coit, I'd say arguably had their best win under Archie Miller. Certainly their best non-conference win to this point under Archie Miller, 76-72 at home against Yale, a game that they trailed by 18 points late in the first half. And then in the second half, we're a completely different team. They took it to a level that I don't necessarily know the players knew that they had, but the coaching staff would say that they saw all along the effort level in the second half, the work that they did on the offensive glass, the points in the paint. They bullied Yale over the last 20 minutes, and that's not a team that gets pushed around. They're typically one of the best rebounding teams in the Ivy League. They're the preseason conference favorite in that league. They've been a really good program for an extended stretch under James Jones, and yeah, it was looking bleak toward the end of the first half. You're down 39-21. URI cuts into that a little bit before the break, and they did more than that over the last 20 minutes. I thought it was a really good sign going forward. It has to give that group a lot of confidence.
Archie Miller has talked a lot about his team dealing with adversity, and that has been something that they've had to really learn how to do as a group early on in the season. And that, to me, it's why I asked Archie about it yesterday. That, to me, was a huge step forward. You were down, you're at home, it's a good opponent, and you come back, and you make the plays that you need to, and you don't panic, and you end up winning the game. That is a huge sign of progress as a group that's still coming together, that is still young in terms of playing together. So that was a huge sign for URI, for sure.
23-3 on second chance points in the game. Zeke Montgomery had all 9 of his rebounds in the second half, 6 of those on the offensive glass. He's one of 3 players in double figures with 14 points. Louis Courtwright finishes with 15. Tyson Brown has 10 on 5 for 5 from the field. They shot 56% from 2, 40% from 3. pretty good performance offensively from URI, and you know, just the way they did it with grit and determination against a team that usually doesn't get out tough, I thought was really noteworthy. And you know, it was a big departure from what they showed at Mohegan Sun, where Northwestern, they were clearly out of their depth early in the game. They go down big. And Washington State, they got snowed on late, particularly on the offensive glass at the other end. The Cougars bullied them inside. This was URI responding to a challenge against a team that's predicted to be better than them. It wasn't necessarily something that they could do a couple weeks ago. And I think it gives them real optimism going into a game like Providence. It's a little bit more of a free roll now. I think the players have seen the level they need to get to win against that type of competition. And I don't think you can place a value on that.
I agree. And it's, there's just a different vibe, obviously, this year around that program. And so when you see that happen, you know, you can see with the players that, you know, they believe that they're going to have moments like that. And there is a, yes, this group together is young as a group, but there are some very mature players in that program that can really help you, particularly a guy like Azeek Montgomery, who has seen high-level basketball in his college career and knows what it looks like and can help his team respond, because he knows, okay, sure, we didn't, you know, we're down after the first half. Let's go out and play well in the second half and let's punch him back. And that's exactly what Rhodey did. So, yeah, there's some of that experience sprinkled into the roster, I think, is going to help them, you know, going forward too.
URI obviously with some news this week as well. David Green had his waiver request denied by the NCAA. He will sit out the 2023-24 season. That's noteworthy because if you talk to URI's coaching staff, they feel like he's been one of their best players in practice. He certainly flashed in the blue-white game, had 26 points in that one, 19 in the first half against his teammates. Cody, I wonder if you have any thoughts on the NCAA in general, waiver process in general. I know Archie Miller had some extended comments on it during his media availability on Thursday.
It's inconsistent. That's the problem. That's the gray area. It's inconsistent. Why does David Green not get a waiver, but some other guy with some other circumstance in some other place get a waiver, you know, in some power program or something like that? That's the problem here. That's why, you know, some of these programs have, you know, a real argument in terms of, you know, trying to get these guys on the floor, and a real argument in terms of, well, they get a denied a waiver, so why can't we have our guy on the floor, but they can have theirs? So right, the inconsistency is tough. I mean, I do think it, on the surface, you know, the one, it's called one-time transfer. And so I think if you're going to find some consistency, you should allow a guy to have a one-time transfer. And then if he's going to do it a second time, sure, you know, that's probably when you should be able to sit. But there's so many different circumstances too that go into that. But it's overall, it's inconsistent. And I think that's what Rhodey's argument here was.
Good description. I agree. It is inconsistent. I agree with Archie Miller that the NCAA shouldn't be in the waiver business at all. You know, they shouldn't insert themselves into these things. It's much too lawyer. You wind up with lawsuits. You wind up with coaches saying, I'm going to call my attorney general and, you know, we're going to settle this through the state. It's going to sue the NCAA. And it just rises to a level that is so far from the initial intentions of the rule. In my mind, I've got a couple thoughts on it. I do think that denying immediate eligibility for a two-time transfer is a good thing for a program at URI's level. Because I could see four-star player, top 100 type player, can't get off the bench at Boston College, transfers to URI, is a first-team All-A-10 player, and someone in the SEC or the ACC comes in and says, hey, kid, here's $500,000. Come play for us next year. You're immediately eligible. You're leaving. URI has very little in the way of being able to retain such a player and build going forward, other than the threat of sitting out a season. You know, so in that respect, I think URI fans should be a little careful what they wish for in that way. You know, I also would say that an extra year of education, even though I know, you know, a lot of these guys, the majority of them, want to play professional basketball at this level, I don't see how an extra year of education is a bad thing. advancing toward your degree, maybe building towards a master's degree.
Bingo.
You know, I was listening to the Rhodey Baseline podcast the other night. They had Emma Squires on, who's a grad assistant with the URI Women this year. She's spending a sixth year in college to finish her master's in fashion merchandising. She's not paying for that. Some of her peers, her classmates, will come out six figures in student loan debt. You know, if you are a men's basketball player at this point, football player at this point, and you may have a COVID year, COVID waiver, you're also forced to sit out a year as a transfer. In a 5 or 6 years of college, you could have a master's or two different undergraduate degrees and not have paid for them, not have the burden of student debt coming out if professional basketball doesn't work out for you, professional football doesn't work out for you. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I understand that mentally it takes away from your identity as a student athlete. It takes away what you love to do. I don't mean to diminish the mental health effects of that, the frustrations that that would bring. But generally, I don't think that a blanket two-time transfer or waivers for every two-time transfer or whatever it may be, I don't think that would be a long-term benefit to a program in URI's position.
That's a great point coming from the URI perspective. I think it's a great point. I mean, the good news about this too is, Bill, you talked about the identity. Okay, so David Green can't play this year. He can still practice every day. And yeah. And he can still be there. And he can still have that part of his identity. And, you know, for him and probably his teammates, when he's one of their best practice players, think about the hype that that's going to bring to, well, you know, hey, we'll see how this season goes, where they finish. But, you know, imagine, you know, they go to the A-10 tournament, maybe get a victory or two, get to the, you know, wherever they get to in the tournament, and they say, well, we had a good year, but wait till next year. We've got David coming. He's going to be eligible. And all of a sudden, and then you start to think like, okay, that's great for a program. So, you know, the fact that he can be on the floor, it's not like he can't be around the team. And that's a good thing here, is the fact that he can still help them. And I'm sure that he's embraced that so far, being one of their best players in practice. So, yeah, I agree with you. And it's a great point about, you know, not being immediately eligible with some, when some school comes in. That's the world of NIL and what can happen. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that from URI's perspective.
Yeah, bad, you know, as usual, bad process from the NCAA. They can't do anything right. You know, shouldn't be involved in this at all. Shouldn't have to wait until the last day of November for an answer. You're already 3 weeks into your season. That's ridiculous. You know, don't necessarily love the decision. I understand the reasoning behind it. I don't necessarily have to like it. You know, wish David the best as he goes through this season. I hope URI staff is able to keep him comfortable and progressing academically and with his game, and, you know, really look forward to seeing him out there next year. Because he'll be the best recruit they have by far.
Yeah, amen.
You know, going into next season, regardless of whatever freshman they have coming in or whoever they have coming in the portal, he will be their best addition, most likely, as they go into 2024-25. We'll shift to Bryant at this point, you know, because we saw them the other night, the Bulldogs finally playing at home. It feels like they were on the road forever. You know, they've been all over the place, really. I mean, you know, at Xavier, they're at Florida Atlantic, they're at BU, they're at Rutgers. Hasn't been much of Bryant in Smithfield. The other night they played Springfield, Division III opponent, 108-74. It was gap on the schedule. It was a date that they wanted to fill. They didn't want a full week off between Xavier and Brown. They had another game in mind, Coy. They wanted to play the defending national champions at UConn. That one ultimately didn't come to fruition. Phil Martelli went into that a little bit, not only in the preseason, but also post-game the other night, the realities of college scheduling. This is the second non-D1 Bryant has played. They also beat Fisher earlier in the season. And Coit, I thought, as usual, Phil was candid. He was insightful. And he pulled back the curtain a little bit on all his unanswered phone calls and text messages throughout the summer.
I get it. It's frustrating. And clearly he wanted it out there. So he put it out there. Clearly Phil, I'm sure, heard from, UConn fans out there. They voiced their opinion. That was pretty clear and obvious on social media this mm-hmm. week. We're not afraid of you. You know, we heard a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I get it. It's frustrating. I would Phil have said that on the same night he's playing a Division III opponent if it wasn't a team from his own league that was playing UConn? I think that's what kind of got under his skin there. And I get it.
A very clear point in that way, yes.
Yeah, right. I get that. You know, the frustration is there. And I, you know, as a fan of college basketball, I think it makes total sense for these power programs in New England to play more of these schools that are in New England instead of Bryant having to get on a plane and quickly get to Cincinnati to play Xavier on Black Friday at noon.
Right.
Like, it makes sense to be able to do that. So I, you know, and I get it. The power schools are like, well, you know, I don't know. There's arguments on both sides, but bottom line is if you're UConn, if you're Providence, if you're Boston College, you should be able to, and this is no offense to Phil and Bryant, but you should be able to invite them, especially if you're UConn, defending national champions, you should be able to invite them to stores and you should beat them. You should beat them up because you have the talent that you have.
Correct.
You have Donovan freaking Clingan. Like, it's just that's why I used to the Brown Providence argument over the years here, and Providence not playing Brown. It was just like, just play them.
Here we go.
Just play them.
Here
no,
we
just,
go.
It's just like, and I know Friar fans, or we don't need to play them. Okay, but you can. You play Columbia, so why don't you just play Brown? They're right there, and it makes total sense to me. You should win that game. You should win the game. You shouldn't be afraid. You shouldn't be. If your team is that good, your program is that good, you should be able to win the game. That's it.
Coit channeling his weekend partner, Scott Cordishi, right there.
I'm just saying, man.
Little Brown PC rant. Gotta love it. To Phil's point, so UConn obviously playing Kansas Friday night, a huge Big East Big 12 battle showdown, which is going to be fascinating. You know, UConn playing Indiana and Texas on a neutral court at Madison Square Garden. They play North Carolina at Madison Square Garden. That's part of the Jimmy V Classic. They play Gonzaga in Seattle. That's obviously a showcase game for their program. It's probably a place that they hope to recruit. The Pacific Northwest has had a host of good players down the years. You know, certainly a fertile market for talent. You know, UConn would like to see themselves as a national brand. They're the national champions. They've won it five times. You could certainly say that their reach extends well beyond New England. I think Phil's quibble with this is the fact that they play home bye games against Northern Arizona, Mississippi Valley State, Arkansas, Pine Bluff. I think that's probably where his point of contention lies.
Yeah.
Why would you buy them and not us when we can just take a bus ride to play you? And instead, we're stuck going to Xavier and then Ole Miss on New Year's Eve. You know, why can't we just fill out our schedule with UConn and Providence and Boston College instead?
Yeah.
Don't make any mistake. This is an argument of convenience for Phil as well, you know, because he doesn't want to get on a plane and go to Rutgers and go to Ole Miss and go to Cincinnati and go to Xavier and all that. Like, that's out of Bryant's way. That's travel that puts real miles on his players' bodies, and he knows it.
Of course.
You know, and the difficult part for Bryant is the way you schedule. You don't want to get bought too much. You know, Tim O'Shea had issues with that early in his career at Bryant when they had made the transition to Division One. They were basically using that schedule as a fundraiser for their program.
Yeah, and right,
you know, you're playing so many games where you really don't have a chance to win going into it. You know, and the challenge for your team through the non-conference is to convince the players that they're doing the right things and that they are improving without the results. That's really, really hard when you're going out and you lose by 20 to Cincinnati and 30 to Xavier and, you know, 25 to Ole Miss, you know, and say, guys, we did some of the right things tonight. The players look at each other and say, these guys are nuts. We just got our doors blown off. We're not any good.
Right.
And then you got to go into America East and you got to play at Vermont and at UMass Lowell, and your confidence level just isn't going to be there. You know, so this is partly, you know, Phil serving Bryant's interests as well. But, you know, the fact is he makes a very compelling argument, and it's one I happen to agree with. I would like to see more regional play, particularly in the non-conference. I understand that Bryant has 13 games to schedule outside of the 18 in America East, and it's not necessarily easy to fill those when you're a program who's been in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago and, you know, one that's had a reputation in the last two or three years for being edgy and difficult to play against. You know, maybe it's a little bit more than an opponent wants to bite off on a given night. You know, even one that's in the top five or top 10 like UConn.
But if you're that good, you should win the game.
Sure.
And you should take care of business.
Of course.
If you're that good. And that's my argument for this. That's why I just shake my head at some of that, because it's, you know, I've heard the argument from all sides, and that's why I bring up the Providence and Brown thing. And I'm glad that they're playing this year. They should play each other. They're local rivalries. And Phil is a guy from Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, they don't have this problem. In Philadelphia, all those programs and all those schools face each other every year. And Villanova this year, unfortunately, is seeing the downside of that with two losses in their area, St. Joseph's being the latest, but they play and they should play. And it's fun. It's fun for talk. It's fun for, you know, local matchups, rivalries. These guys know each other. They play pickup during the summer. It's great branding for everybody in terms of New England and all these schools and these basketball programs. And you're right. It helps in terms of the travel. Some of these schools don't have to get on a plane. I mean, Bryant's going to Ole Miss before they have to, you know, start conference play. Like that It's tough. So, but it's slightly exciting when you hear like, oh yeah, PC's playing Brown tonight. They're right up the road. That's cool. Sure. Some of the alumni, they, as Archie Miller talked about with PC and URI and the rivalry, it's like these people cross paths every day. They run into each other at the local freaking Dunkin' Donuts on whatever street in Providence. Like they're talking about their programs. Like it's great. It's great when that happens. These teams should all play each other. Bryant should play everybody. Brown should play everybody. That's the way it should be. Like I said, Phil's from Philly. He's seen it with his own eyes. That's why he's making that argument.
Villanova 3-0 at the Battle for Atlantis, 0-2 in the Big Five.
Woof.
Losing to Penn and then losing to St. Joe's. Yikes, Wildcats. Kyle Neptune, better figure it out, man.
And still in the top 25, right?
Not next week. Not next week.
Yeah.
Kyle, better figure it out.
Yep.
Better figure it out. Jay Wright wasn't losing those games.
But, you know, can that be a good thing for a program like Villanova down the road? Like, can that be sort of a wake-up call? Who knows?
Well, it's a great thing for everybody else because, you know, it keeps the Big Five relevant, fresh. You don't need to sit there and say, oh, Villanova's just killing everybody. Why are we playing these games? Nope. Not anymore.
It's great.
Not anymore. It's a beautiful thing.
Love that.
You mentioned the you know, what I'd like to think of as the other traditionalist in the market, Mike Martin. You know, I group him with Phil in that way. You know, two guys who have talked a lot about the importance of local rivalries and, you know, local games and you know, place a certain deal of credibility in those matchups. You know, Brown is coming off a trip to the Bahamas. They replaced Providence at Baja Mar and went 1-2 in those games. The last one was a loss to Ohio. They were beaten by Delaware in the opener. They beat Kansas City in overtime in the middle game. Coit, you know, we had Mike Martin availability on Thursday. You know, and he is, I think he is just as puzzled as we might be in terms of where they sit right now. I'm sure he wasn't expecting to be 2-6. I'm sure he was expecting a certain standard out of this group that hasn't necessarily been met every night. You know, I asked Mike, I said, you've seen what you did at Colgate when you're right in the game against the team that wins its league every year. We've seen what you did at USC, you know, a team that's in the top 15 when you play them and, you know, has pros and is going to play at the top of the Pac-12 this season. You're right in that game until the last 2 minutes. Some of these other results, when you put them in the backdrop of those two games, are very confusing. And when you look at Baja Mar and you look at them losing to Delaware and losing to Ohio, it's just a team that hasn't necessarily found itself yet through eight games.
Yeah, it hasn't found itself. It's a good way to put it. Because there's still some, that was my first question to Mike. Like, is there still some searching going on? Mm. You seem to find some sparks, some things here and there. You know, AJ Lespert is, you know, the performance that he did against Kansas City. You say, okay, well, they find something there. You know, well, maybe, but you know, he's still got to improve on the defensive end and those sorts of things. Yeah, there's still some search because you know what you have in Keno Lilly Jr. You know what you have in Nana Wosuwanane. I think you know what you have in Kalu Anya, but he's had some struggles too. You know, the turnovers in the game against Ohio, that was particularly tough.
Those hurt.
Yeah. So, and not just him, that's the entire squad, 18 turnovers. So there's still some searching going on, some growth for a guy like Kalu, or, you know, guys in different spots now that are expected to elevate into different roles here. You know, because they're replacing a guy like a Paxson Wojcik who did a lot of different things for this team. Mm. So there's still some growing pains going on with them. And at times you see it and you say, okay, as you mentioned with the Colgate game, with USC, with the victories that they have, you like, okay, you see it, you see what they can be, but it just hasn't been consistent yet. So, you know, when that happens, when they take that step, when they make that leap, we'll see. You know, but Mike Martin said that he feels like, you know, playing Bryant will make them better. And I agree with that. I think you're in an intense emotional rivalry game like you will be, you know, at the Pensacola Center against the Bulldogs. I think it brings the best out of you. Maybe you find things that maybe surprise you. Who knows? But they will be better off for it. So it's going through growing pains. You know, still got a month here left in non-conference schedule before you hit the league, which is good. Like, Ivy League's going to be good. So still got some time, but you know, they will have to find some answers at some point.
And the one area that Mike singled out was the turnovers. They're over 20% of their possessions at this point. They're in the 290s, according to Ken Pom. You know, and oddly enough, it's not Keno who is, you know, one of their most used players in terms of possessions. He's only at 14%, which is excellent for a guy who has a ball in his hands that much.
Yeah.
You know, but you look at someone like Kalu Anya, who's at over 24%. Landon Lewis, who's over 24%, Felix Kloman, who's over 21%, Malachi Nadir, who's seen less minutes, but pushing 35% in terms of turnovers, turnover percentage. It's difficult to establish any sort of rhythm, any sort of way of playing when you're giving the ball away that much. And, you know, as Mike said in his presser, that affects your defense. It affects your floor balance. Teams are scoring on you in transition. You know, you turn it over, or you might take a bad shot. That affects who gets back on defense. You know, you don't necessarily have that initial two or three guys back playing transition defense. It allows easy baskets at the other end. You know, and so Brown is sort of, they're not playing good complementary basketball. We talk about that a lot in football. You know, your defense leading to your offense with field position, or your special teams leading to your offense with field position. You know, in Brown's case, it's mistakes on offense, putting their defense in a bad position and opponents being able to take advantage and score. You know, and you mentioned Ohio the other day, 18 turnovers in the game, 26% of your possessions, you just give away turnovers. Very, very difficult to win games that way. I think Ohio had 30 points off of those giveaways, which is just a ton to be giving away on a nightly basis.
Yeah, it is. So something obviously to clean up here, and finding some answers in the backcourt in terms of who can handle the basketball behind Keno too will help you. Because as you mentioned, Keno has the ball in his hands a lot, but it's not always going to be the case. And they've got some youth there. They've got some different guys that have come in there. So, you know, will that help them a little bit? Probably. So we'll see. The search continues.
Hope so. You know, certainly hope so, because, you know, Brown, this was predicted to be a good season for them. You know, they're supposed to break into the Ivy League top four. You know, nothing that they were going to do non-conference was going to affect that. You know, realistically, this probably wasn't going to be an NCAA tournament type team through an at-large bid. You know, they were going to be a team that was going to have to play well in the Ivy League. that's still a few games away. They still have some time to find some things here before they do get into league play in the early part of 2024. And that starts on Friday night against Bryant. Coit, we will be back shortly with a preview pod, the rivalry edition, to get you all ready for Brown Bryant, Providence, URI. Thank you all very much.